Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is a bonus episode with Kyle Wagner. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Kyle Wagner, we explore a number of interesting topics like his definition of project-based learning, why authenticity is key, the best project Kyle has ever seen, and how project-based learning flips traditional school on its head. Thanks for spending some time with me and listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by CSC Consulting Group, whose venture is a social enterprise, and their vision is to catalyze sustainable change in our society, one organization at a time. Learn more at www.cscconsultinggroup.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. I know the owner and founder of School Spirit Vending. He is a personal friend, and he brings hassle-free fundraising to your school. But even better, Matt has written a top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. He's given it away completely free. Get it at schoolzonepodcast.com. That's the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. We are back again with a guest who originally starred in episode 85, and this is Kyle Wagner. He is the current middle school program director at IMS in Hong Kong and the founder and lead consultant for Transform Educational Consulting, an organization that empowers school leaders to lead change and improve student learning through simple, innovative strategies and teaming structures. He's also the former coordinator of Futures Academy at the International School of Beijing, a program that uses interdisciplinary project-based learning to connect students to their passions and the world outside of school. His book, The Power of Simple, documents this experience and helps provide simple, research-based strategies for school transformation. Kyle's also a former educator at High Tech High, the school featured on the hit documentary Most Likely to Succeed. He holds a Master's of Education in Teacher Leadership with a thesis that focuses on developing democratic classrooms and distributed leadership models. So, Kyle, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, we talked back in episode 85, and we really got to explore a bit about your book, The Power of Simple. And now you're building on that, and you're doing some really amazing stuff around project-based learning. So I do want to hear about that exciting stuff and what you're able to offer school leaders. But can you start with a definition of project-based learning? Because it seems like that's one of those things. You ask 10 people, they have 10 different definitions. And I'm just curious, an expert like you, how do you define project-based learning?
Well, I was about to actually Google it and go with the actual definition that exists, because this very question, yeah, pops up a lot because it's different in everyone's mind. But I would say it would be taking, you know, a real authentic problem or challenge. It doesn't always have to be a problem. It could just be a question, a deep question that's worth investigating, you know, seeking out solutions to that particular problem in a deep inquiry, student-driven process, so that there is a clear outcome at the end.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. You know, I was hearing inquiry and outcomes and this kind of stuff, you know, and in the pre-chat, you were talking about some of the things that you've seen that have made incredible projects, right? And then some of the things that absolutely make a terrible project. So what do those look like?
Yeah, I think that's a good starting point. So, you know, starting with the definition, I think, of project-based learning, because that gets people confused a lot, is that it's really authentic. And so I would say that really the projects that really stand out in my mind from ones that I've seen and ones that I've developed, because I've developed some real duds, to be honest. And, you know, sometimes you think you're doing really good project-based learning, you realize that it's not really connected to a real authentic issue. It's just something that was kind of thought up inside of a closed walls or inside of your think tank within your classroom or your school. So I'd say really the components of real good projects are ones that are authentic. They're addressing an actual need within the community, whether that be a need from a local hospital and looking for assistive medical devices, whether that be need for a field guide to the local, you know, flora and fauna of the region, whether that be, you know, a very bad pollution problem, which has existed in some of the places that I've lived. So that right there is a necessary component. It's got to be authentic. Usually the starting point is the community, I would say, is also another big component as well. Some of the best projects I've seen are born out of just a simple walk or scavenger hunt throughout the community to look for really what are these deep investigative problems or challenges that exist, and starting from there. So those are some components. One that also too really, really engages students and gets them to be able to insert a bit of themselves and their own authentic solutions to particular challenges. So it's not like everything looks the same. Sometimes if you have, so let's kind of look at the flip side of that, which I think a lot of times when we were in school, I think back to my schooling experience. And actually, in fact, I think back to some of the projects I developed where you have a model for what students will produce. But pretty much those models don't really deviate that much. And that's simply because, you know, it's something that you've done as a kid in school, whether that be the sugar cube tower, the sugar cube replica of the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, or you learn about the missions of California and you're going to recreate those. I remember a castle project that I had where I was recreating a castle of medieval Europe, which, you know, look, there are lots of fun, but they're kind of in the confines of just representing the learning that you just did. So you're just kind of regurgitating that content and not really doing it in a way that's really adding value to something that exists outside of school. So I would say those are kind of the factors that differentiate really good projects from ones that don't really make it out of school.
The interesting thing about that is, you know, you could even, I think about your own leadership or teaching style. And when you're trying to be somebody else, you know, it's inauthentic. And when you're trying to just reproduce what you loved about school, there might be great components about it. You got to figure out, what does this mean for my students? But that's still very much based in what serves you well, right? And it's ignoring those that you're serving in terms of students that are in front of you that change every single year, and what they need is going to change as well. What I'm hearing is curiosity, community, investigating what problems are very real, and so that the project, it becomes authentic and addresses solving those interesting problems. Mm-hmm. But for a teacher, how do you help them through being like overwhelmed from that? Because it's going to change every single time you ask the question, what's a problem you want to solve, right? And I like it when I have this structure and I can reproduce it every single day in my class, but this is much more malleable and fluid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I would say that if we back up, I would say it's kind of a mixture between some certain benchmarks and milestones that you set within the project where you've done some pre-planning, and some that you just is flexible that you allow to happen. So I'd say, you know, I don't know where the quote comes from, but some of the greatest creativity or some of the greatest solutions or greatest flexibility comes within a structure. So it's not just a free for all where you said, hey, what problems are worth solving? I think that you want to get to that point with kids, certainly. But at least in the initial stages for teachers, it's starting with really a problem that is worth solving that all kids are invested in together. Because there are certain projects where you're leading kids in multiple different directions, solving all kinds of problems. And then there are some that are more a problem that you're tackling together as a group. So for example, an inquiry that really is meaningful to all students, especially living in Beijing, because you have simply to drive within, I think, about 2 or 3 miles, and there's a smell that's being emitted from this river, and it's got the nickname, unfortunately, a stinky river.
Oh boy!
Because you could really smell it coming from a long ways away, and so look, it's not exactly what you want to smell coming from a river, but that's an obvious problem that all kids would be interested in tackling and existed within their community. And so it's just a matter of setting up that experience of, okay, look, we have this particular foul-smelling river. It's one that we cross all the time going home. And in fact, some of your houses are really located right on this particular river. And yes, we're in a – because it's an international school I was at. And yes, we're in a foreign country. But we need to be invested. We're all invested in this problem because tackling this particular problem would benefit all of us. And so that's the inquiry you lead them in, where it's, you know, how do we really use data and investigation and real authentic solutions to help make an improvement in the it's really called the Wenyu River, but we'll call it the Stinky River for now because it's more exciting. you know, that's the inquiry you gauge them in. Now, what students come up with in terms of their solutions are deviate completely, but they're at least grounded in the central inquiry. And really a lot of their own way in which they tackle that problem is where they can insert a lot of their interests, a lot of their particular questions that they have. And so it's not just this free-for-all where you just say, okay, kids, what problems are worth solving? And let's look at those problems, and kids are going in multiple directions. They are going to be going in multiple directions, but you really are setting up clear milestones through this deep investigation. So they're going to explore the river. They're going to collect data. They're going to talk with some professionals in the field. They're going to do some interviewing. They're going to prototype particular solutions. They're going to test those out. So that's all those things as a teacher that you can, you know, rest assured that you know some of those things are in place and what the students actually come up with in terms of solutions. That's where you get the deviance.
And when you work with, I'm just curious, I don't know, maybe it absolutely changes based on the school you work with, but those that seem a little more overwhelmed by approaching project-based learning, is there some sort of like critical point that then they become all in and own it? And if so, like what gets teachers there?
You mean where they feel very comfortable with the process?
Yes. That's a much better way of saying it. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think first you're right. It depends on the school. I think it depends on their previous exposure to project-based learning. What I like to do with schools first is come up with a common definition of what it isn't. Yeah. And that sometimes helps them to realize, because first you want schools to be able to see like, okay, projects aren't necessarily the things that we put together when we were kids. I mean, those are projects, certainly, but it's not a project-based experience. The learning wasn't dependent on the project. The project was pretty much driven by the learning. And so you really want to come up with that common definition. I think first, once you kind of debunk what it's not, then you can get them to a comfortable state on, okay, well, I know that's, I haven't been doing that, but what does it actually look like? And so I take schools through multiple examples of what good projects look like. And by them participating in this kind of gallery walk, we start to really deconstruct what a project is and then just break it down to its simple components. I think once I break it down to its simple components, we say, look, planning a project is no different from the way you plan a good unit. You plan it backwards. You envision what your students are going to produce. Let's set some milestones. And I think once they've gone through that plan, that design, and we've worked on it together, I think they feel that's where they're kind of all in, where they feel comfortable. Once they have some of those things set, they know where the inquiry is going to be. They know how they're going to launch it. They know what are some of the experiences they're going to engage students in. And they can kind of envision what students might produce. Then I think that's when they feel comfortable and going more all in.
You know, you explained earlier in the episode what makes a great project and what makes a dud. I'm curious if you'll share with the listeners, what has been the absolute best project that you've seen and what made it so great?
Oh, man, yeah, because I've seen so many good projects. Well, I think there's a couple that come to mind. And I think if anyone's listening to this and they've seen the documentary Most Likely to Succeed, have you seen that?
I have, yeah.
Yeah. So, and you see kind of in that film now that it's not all just about High Tech High, but High Tech High is featured in it. And one of the projects is really where they mixed engineering and civilization. And you see this beautiful recreation of this wheel that progresses you through human history and through different civilizations. And it's this beautiful combination of engineering and also history, and you know, where you're turning one lever and it sets this whole thing into motion. I think for the sheer beauty of what that represents, I mean, I think that that is one that would stand out. And if you've, you know, seen this particular documentary, I don't want to give too much away, but you can watch it and see more in detail about this project. But I also think that they don't necessarily have to be that complex. They could be really solving a pretty simple challenge. There's one in which I've seen where there was a hospital in need of assistive medical device with surgeries, and because they were having to get very microscopic in terms of what they were observing. And I have a friend out at another school, and this is out at a school called Park Maitland, and they were doing some really cool stuff out there. But she was really engaging the students in working together with the actual medical professionals and the ones who are developing this medical technology and coming up with that particular device. So the kids working right alongside them. And I'm not sure if the final product or production was really, you know, totally the kids, but this is the case in any project, right? Mm-hmm. You can't attribute it to one person. And I think by them having that experience of working right alongside these professionals and giving their particular insight and coming up, they just prototyped right alongside those in the field and finally solved this particular dilemma. I mean, that's one that particularly that stands out to me as well that I've observed. So these are a couple of the projects. I think there's one is solving an authentic problem or challenge. And I think one is just really engaging the kids in a deep investigation and really, you know, recreating history in a way that's very kind of fluid. So two very different projects. I know too that one in which they devised a weather balloon the kids set up the weather balloon and they're documenting the weather over, you know, series of time. And I think that's pretty neat. And I think working with the weather station to have that weather balloon being used to really actually document, you know, changes. Yeah. Seeing kids who have devised ways to get, they said, hey, here's a simple body of water. You need to devise a way to walk across the water. I mean, these kind of projects to me, with the simple statement as to what the kids need to do, the challenge, but yet the complexity of the abstract principles they have to learn, is really just the sheer beauty of a good project.
This is the best part too, because, you know, they're solving these interesting problems. They have ownership of their learning and they're not tethered to like a textbook or worksheet or, you know, to learn these deep principles, right? And these abstract comments like you're talking about, you can teach these core principles through very creative projects within your school.
Yeah. And I think that it just flips the whole idea of schooling, I think, on its head, because generally, if you think back to, and I keep saying my schooling, but I have to be careful because I did have some really, really great experiences. So it wasn't all of my schooling, but I just know the old school philosophy that's pretty much permeates way into schools and still exists kind of in a lot of schools today is you guys can't investigate that stuff yet. I mean, you don't really know enough. You're not experts yet. So let's let you become experts and let's teach you all the content you need, you know, and then let's let you do that. Like, I mean, it's like saying, you know, in terms of a bicycle, right? You know, you got to do the training wheels and you can get on the bicycle. I remember actually, I could never go to the golf course. My next door neighbor would never, all I wanted to do was golf. And I knew I wasn't very good, but he said, you know what? You're not ready. You need to go to the range and practice and practice and practice. Well, I lost interest in golf, you know? And it took me actually 18 years old just getting on the course and hacking it up. And I think the same thing applies to projects. You know, engage students right away into, the investigation and treating them like adults and experts and having them have that deficiency and knowing that there's a lot more they need to know, because then they come with this, you know, kind of these arms wide open in terms of, hey, teacher, you know, or facilitator, guide me to the content I need to really solve this particular challenge. And it puts you in the prime position to really either A, guide them to that particular content, or B, have them engaged in the content you would want them to be engaged in the first place. So,
love it.
Yeah, I think that's the approach.
Yeah, yeah.
Today's podcast is brought to you by CSC Consulting Group, whose team represents and shares a stake with the populations they serve. Their mission is to support people in education and nonprofit organizations to improve processes and enhance the performance of their organizations. You can learn more at www.cscconsultinggroup.com. conferences, piles of flyers, getting stuck in endless email lists and never-ending calls, there's an easier way to sort through and identify the best school fundraisers. School Spirit Vending proudly presents the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas of 2017. It's a guide of the top fundraising companies hand-picked from the best podcasts. As an added bonus, this guide lists five resource companies that would add tremendous value to your community, school, and students. The best part is that School Spirit Vending is giving the guide away completely free. Are you ready to simplify the search? Download the free guide at schoolzonepodcast.com.
You were talking about having a course that's out that revolves and focuses on project-based learning. To help people out. Can you explain it and go a little deep with what that is, where people can get it, and what they can expect from taking the course?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, first to the backup as to why the course exists, because I myself have been in the shoes of, I think, maybe many listeners who really want to dive in but are very kind of scared or apprehensive. And the course was born out of that because there wasn't really a lot that was out there. And I think there still is not enough out there on project-based learning. I think that there's actually a lot that's out there, but it's not, it's all sending different informations and different signals, if you know what I mean. So it's hard to find one cohesive thing that will take you from, hey, here's how to design a particular project. Here's what good projects look like. Let's design your own. Let's launch it. Let's implement it. And I think that's what this course really provides, is kind of a step A through step Z in project design, so that by the end of this particular course, which won't take, if you really did it end to end and you sat down for two solid days, you could do it. And but you would feel quite comfortable being able to start and launch that project with students right away. And it's born out of the kind of the work that I've done with schools and seeing what their biggest needs are. It's born out of kind of seeing what my particular biggest needs are. And it's born out of really a compilation of all the best resources. And of course, you can go to a workshop over 2 days and get something like that. But I think really what this course does is, you know, a workshop is very intensive. And there's a lot of learning thrown at you in 2 day period, and sometimes you don't see the deeper transformation in the school. This course really takes you mindfully and takes you at a really good pace through the design of a project, with really the support of myself offering additional support in terms of you working through your project as well.
What does that support look like for the course enrollee?
Yeah, so the support, you know, once they enroll in the particular course, they get the modules, the four modules, of course, first being understanding what project-based learning is and looking at a lot of projects and some of the best and some of the worst. And then on the second stage, designing that project and starting to come up with your components of your own project. Third stage, assessing that project. And fourth stage, how do you implement and manage that project? And really, the supplemental pieces that I offer are mastermind calls where I'm working with the course enrollees. And that could be either with individuals who are taking it across multiple schools, or as I've done with some schools, with teachers at that same school and offering these particular phone calls that help teachers really work through dilemmas that they're having, or misunderstandings, or additional support that they need with their project, all the way from how do I offer feedback to students in their projects in a meaningful way? How do I assess the projects? How do I incorporate content? What about experts? How do I really utilize my experts in a project-based experience? How do I plan an exhibition? So they think this is, you know, something that is offered that's all part of that journey, and we're kind of exploring together that is maybe not offered elsewhere.
And where can my listeners get their hands on your new course?
So, yeah, there'll be a couple places in which you can get it. First, the first stop shop is, and it's pretty easy to remember, is on my website, which is transformschool.com. So it's pretty easy to remember, transformschool.com. And there'll be a direct link there to be able to get the course. The course will also be advertised pretty consistently that you can get your hands on it through Twitter as well. So you'll see links to where to get that particular course, and also directly from Teachable, the Teachable site, because that's the particular software I used to put it together. So that's another place to get it. And then I'm also offering webinars or previews, which is a good way to kind of see if, hey, is this something that I think would really benefit me? And I'm offering those webinars on a pretty consistent basis, on a monthly basis. And you'll be able to see where those webinars are through Twitter. And then finally, my last step would just be to, you know, shoot out my email as well for people to be able to email me directly and get send the links to. And that's at kylewagner@transformschool.com.
So listeners, you know that all of those links will be there for you in the show notes, whether it's enrolling and following Kyle on Twitter and checking out when he's releasing a new webinar to give you a taste of the course and see if it's right for you. Or if you know, like, I'm ready to do this project-based stuff with Kyle. He's the guy, and I want to take myself, my class, maybe my school through this A to Z process, then the link will be there for you on his website. And also, his email address will be linked up in the show notes, too, if you have a question for him and just want to reach out personally and say, Kyle, I want to work with you. Help me with project-based learning. That will all be there for you. Kyle, just a few questions to close up. I'm curious, what's one book every principal should read right now and why?
Yeah, I think, and I mentioned this earlier, and actually, you know what? I'm changing it from what my last book was, because I said The Innovator's Mindset, which I think is a brilliant book, but I'm actually really turned on now to From Childhood to Adolescence by Dr. Maria Montessori. And it's, you know, written back in the 1940s, 1949, I think it was, but it's absolutely just transcends all time. And what she was writing about back then is everything that we're talking about today in terms of individualized learning, self-directed, student-centered learning, practical, like we're mentioning, move from the practical to the abstract, getting students outside of school, acting as a guide on the side. So I don't know. I might be a Montessori convert soon, but that's one I definitely recommend picking up.
It's fantastic, too, to see how it cuts through time, but it's so applicable to what's happening now and what we want to accomplish in schools.
Yeah.
What do you do for fun, Kyle?
Oh, man, there's many things I do for fun. So I'm actually, and I think, you know, if it mentioned I was in San Diego, it's just because I was just in San Diego, living in San Diego, but I'm now living in Hong Kong. And I'm really, really enjoying hiking. I'm also enjoying a lot of these ventures out to these antique stores. I'm getting kind of into that lately. And my biggest passion is writing music. And so I'm kind of inspired now that I've moved to Hong Kong. I've got a place kind of overlooking the water, and it just gives me so much inspiration for writing music. So those are some of the things I've been getting up to lately. And then at the last thing I'd mentioned too is traveling. I like to travel as much as possible. I feel like, you know, every time I travel to a new place, it's a new piece of me that I've developed that I haven't really yet explored.
You know, that's pretty cool. I like what you said about music too. I remember when I worked at Brooks, Gianluca Fermi, an Italian that moved to America and, you know, got married to this sort of thing. And he was our tech director, and he played classical guitar. And he would play for the kids. He would play at these big events, but he did that, right, for a form of expression and connecting with art. And I think of, other type of folks that, let's say my students, that would perform slam poetry, right? And again, mm-hmm. it was this way of dealing with, at times, really hard stuff, like, you know, oppression and prejudice and racism. And it gave voice to themselves, and, you know, when they couldn't express it in that moment, right? And so I'm just curious, like, why do you perform music?
All right, well, I got to shoot back a question and I'll answer that. But do you play? Don't you play?
I do, but like my guitar's still in Texas.
Oh, no. Yeah, this is something we were talking about, right? Yeah. It's still in transit. Yeah. One of your most important possessions, yeah. That and a beer trimmer. Yeah. We won't talk too much about that. That's but okay. Yeah, why do I, like, I think performing, like, for me, it's music, but I really feel like everybody, performance is just an extension of your, it's a way of getting your creative expression out there. And so some people are like, oh, I wish I could do that. I wish I could perform, but I'm not much of a performer. And I would say part of that's true. Not everyone's born for the stage, but performance is, it doesn't have to be you're on a stage. I think a performance is just sharing your work with the world. And like you mentioned with the slam poetry thing, there's such, it's so freeing to be able to get that out there. And there's so much writing that's locked up, you know, in someone's journal or diary somewhere. There's so much film footage or photography that, you know, never makes its way out. Although there's a lot that's on Instagram that maybe shouldn't be there, but, that's, I think of it, that's why I perform really is because I think it inspires others to find that particular creative expression that exists inside of all us. And then we no longer live in a world we could say, have the excuse, like, well, I'm just not a creative person. It's like BS, you know, like everybody has some sort of creativity in them. And now we have this great network living in this particular age where you could share it, you know, just really the click of a mouse. So, yeah.
Yeah. I love that the sharing, the freedom that you talked about, and you know, listeners that are thinking about should I blog, should I write that book and put it out there, should I pick up whatever instrument and perform? The answer is yes, and it is scary initially, but the world needs you. You know, you are the only version of yourself that's out there, and if Kyle doesn't share his music or me with this podcast or whatever it may be. What would the world be like, you know, without it? Of course, it still goes on, but I feel like these things we do adds value and enriches the lives of those that engage with it. So I appreciate you going there with me, Colin, and talking a little bit about your process and why you perform.
So how long has your guitar been missing for? 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
I've been here for 2 weeks. And the last batch of stuff we sent over, that definitely hasn't even arrived yet. The first batch we sent way before Hurricane Harvey, and that stuff got here. We received, you know, 60% of the stuff. And then, like I was telling you, the post office is holding the rest for hostage.
Man.
And then the rest of the stuff we sent, you know, hasn't arrived yet. So we'll see. Hopefully it arrives in Miriam's office. I think what it is they think that we're shipping stuff that we're going to sell, like we're opening a store or something, or that we bought a gift for ourselves outside of the EU and they want to tax it. But we're like, no, we came here for a job and we shipped all our stuff. This is us moving, right? Like, and it's supposed to get all sorted out, but it just is a process, you know, because you're a world traveler. And so you got to get your apartment, but to get an apartment, you need an ID card. And again, ID card, you know, you need a bank account. It's like, it's all this like circular stuff that you need A to get B, but you know, you need C to get B and you need A to get C. And it's just all crazy. So it'll eventually, it's all going to work out. I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was just getting this idea though, that you mentioned, you know, taking the approach of the post office, maybe it's like singing them a song, or it's telling them that the world's being robbed of, you know, Belgium is being robbed of your creative musicianship for these last, you know, 2.5 weeks, and your soul is dying without it.
You never know. That might persuade. Hey, so Kyle, thanks so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Instead of parting words of advice, I want to ask you, what message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could do so for just one day?
That's a really good question. I guess let's just go with really the whole idea of performing is do what you love. Let's just put that.
I like it. Do what you love.
Yeah.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember, life is 10% of what happens to you, 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Kyle. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Kyle in the search bar. And the show notes page will pop up for this episode. You'll get links to all the resources and the best way to connect with Kyle through email or Twitter. Kyle, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.